I hope everybody's not going to be disappointed, because I'm not going to actually be talking about Luke chapter 24 today, even though that was a scripture reading. So what I wanted to do is, you know, take an opportunity to share with you all a little bit more about me and why we do what we do at Church Service Center, why I feel we are called to do what we are called to do in serving the community of Bartow. And we actually not only serve just the Bartow community, we assist with Fort Meade, Mulberry, and some of the smaller areas as well. So we kind of assist those smaller organizations with things. But a little bit about me, and I think I may have shared this last time, but real quick, I do have a very important question for everybody. Who's willing to give me about 5 minutes? Raise your hand. Who's willing to give me about 5 minutes? Raise your hand. 5 minutes, 5, 10, 15, 20... All right, we can be here for about 40 minutes, okay? We got about 40 minutes. Pastor Anthony told me that as long as we're out by 12:30, we're good. Is that right? Gertie said y'all start walking out at about 12, so I'm gonna try to be sensitive. But why we do what we do at Church Service Center, and what me a little bit of, last time I shared that I was raised Pentecostal, right? So you brought me back, so that didn't bother most of y'all. I was ordained in the Baptist church, literally a block away at Wildwood Baptist. So and we actually used to do a lot of stuff with the youth group here. When I was the youth pastor, there was a youth group here. We did a lot of things together with both churches. We had kickball tournaments and all kinds of fun stuff, working together with McLeod Prez and different things. So ordained there. And then transferred my ordination to First Presbyterian Church. So we got a little bit closer, right? So that's why I guess I was invited back, because I'm over there, ordained at First Pres, serve on session there, love it, love being here with everybody, and love everything that you all do in serving the community and helping Church Service Center and what we do. I do have my wife here with me today, Jenny. Most of you all know Jenny. But I also have Tia here. Tia does a lot at Church Service Center for us. She works in the office, but she also works and represents, does some outreach for the community for us, and does some things at with the different schools and everything. So I was actually going to have Tia come up and share. I'm kidding. Literally, y'all, she just turned like white as a ghost. Joking. She doesn't speak in public. So she reaches out to the schools, does really great in relationship with all the schools to kind of know what they need, keep in contact with counselors, and really paves that relationship with making sure that we meet the needs of the students, meet the needs of teachers, because funding's low, right? So we want to make sure that the teachers are equipped to be able to serve our students while they're going through school. So call me naive, but there's something about the story of Christianity, right? That, you know, story of Jesus, everything about Jesus, and why somebody would not want that story to be true. So when you think about the story of Jesus, and you hear all the great things that Jesus done, it's crazy to me on why somebody just says, yep, nope, I don't want that to be true. To the flip side, there's the other statement of why somebody doesn't believe that it's true. So that's intellectual, right? Intellectual thinking. There's people that say, you know, scientists, different things. They try to always go through and disprove the story of Jesus, disprove the life of Jesus, the death, burial, resurrection, being born of a virgin, all those different things. So why they don't want to believe that it's true, as opposed to why they don't want it to be true. So let's think about those two statements today, believing versus wanting, because whether you believe it or not, and if we, you know, and I don't know today, I'm assuming, because it's a really great core group, that everybody here believes that it's true. But there's just a group of people that really work hard at just saying, hey, I just don't want it to be true. It's so good. Jesus did so good We don't want that. We don't need that in our lives. We don't want it. So, and that just blows my mind. I can't understand or fathom that. So, you know, we have the story, or we're actually going to be reading from John chapter 1. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to be in John 1:1. And then we're going to actually kind of go through a little bit of John 1. Then we're going to skip over to just straight to John 1:14. But in John 1:1 says, in the beginning was the Word, right? So that in the beginning was the Word. That Word, the word Word, is Logos. That's referencing Jesus. And the Word was God, and the Word was with God. So that lets us know that in that very beginning, Jesus was there with God when God created earth. So John, we know a little bit about John. John not only wrote, you know, the book of John. John wrote the three epistles. Get this, very creative names. The epistle of John 1, 2, and 3 is just 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, right? Really creative. So he also wrote those. But what else do we know about John? John lived to be really, really old. He outlived Peter. He outlived James. He outlived all the other disciples. He actually outlived Mary. We know that John, or Jesus, when Jesus was, before he was being crucified, he actually went to, or before he ascended back in heaven, he went to John and said, hey, I want you to take care of my mom. I want you to take care of Mary. You know, and they moved out of, they moved into Ephesus, and that's where he lived out the rest of his life with Mary and took care of her. But can you imagine the pressure that John felt when Jesus said, hey, can you take care of my mom throughout the rest of her life and care for her? That had to be a lot of pressure that John had, a lot of things that John felt, and taking care of Mary, you know. So one of the things that is really important to me, and then I think that why we do what we do at Church Service Center, is there's a word that we use all the time. We've used it several times this morning that I think with this word we wouldn't really even be able to grasp, understand the definition of, fully have the impact of the meaning of this word. And the word is grace. Jesus, when Jesus came as a human, he was born, came into this life as a body. He then defined grace. So John 1:14 goes on to say, you know, John chapter 1, verse 14 says that he came, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So that indicates and lets us know later on that John has meant this whole time that the Word was Jesus. And it became flesh, human body, born, blood, flesh, sweat, tears, everything, experienced everything that we experienced, minus sin, and lived here on this earth. There's a great Presbyterian preacher, Eugene Peterson, right? I'm sure y'all have read or heard a lot that he's stated. He's done some, you know, different writings and things. But one thing that he said that about this scripture reference that I thought was just absolutely amazing, he equated Jesus coming and making his dwelling place here as our neighbors, as our neighbor. So that's pretty much, he's equal to you and I in the sense of he came, lived with us, he was our neighbor. And it's just amazing how when we think of Jesus, we think that, you know, he was this embodiment of God, which he was, But we really lose sight of the smaller things that he went through. I mean, he was a kid. He ran around. He was a 2-year-old that caused trouble. He was a baby that cried a lot. All these different things. So we lose sight of that when all we think about is the majesty of God in the flesh as Jesus. So, and later on in that scripture, John 1:14, it says that Jesus came, and when he came in the fullness of grace and truth. So there's that word grace again, right? He came in the fullness of grace and truth. Not an imbalance, not a little bit of grace and a little bit of truth. And what do I mean by that? So grace and truth, when you raised your kids, you get married, you know, either you came to church, you went to church, you were either you were raised in the grace church or you were raised in the truth church. And let me take one real quick step back and kind of give you an understanding of a good definition of grace. We've probably heard multiple definitions of grace. Does anybody want to share an example of a definition they heard of grace? What does grace mean to you? No, that's great. Nobody? Okay, no pressure. So kind of what I'll do is I'll give us a definition of what grace means, and we'll kind of go by that. But grace is something that we crave as humans, you and I crave grace when our guilt is exposed. Okay? Write that down, circle it, whatever you want to do. But grace is something that we crave as humans when our guilt is exposed. So think about this. Think about when you were a teenager. Some of you, that was, you know, about 5 years ago. So you can remember this. Your parents, you were out late. You came home. Your parents probably went through your room, found your stash of little bottles of alcohol, cigarettes, whatever you did, you know, trying to live a life of a teenager. You walk in the door. It's laid out on the table, right? And you see it sitting there. You know it's yours. You're looking at it. Can't blame your sister. You try. You're your brother or somebody else talked you into holding it for them. You can come up with all the excuses, but you know that was yours. You know you were driving down the street and the officer pulled you over. You know you were speeding. And you can come up with all the excuses in the book, officer, on why you were speeding, but your guilt was exposed. And what we're looking for is grace in those instances. We're looking for a understanding of just being able to clear that up. And Jesus, when he came, he was all grace and all truth all the time. He wasn't just part grace, part truth, or any of that. So on the flip side to that, you know, grace is something that we crave that we need when our guilt is exposed. But grace is also hard for us to give or to acknowledge when somebody else has done something wrong. It's really hard for us to give grace when somebody breaks the law, when somebody breaks into your house, when somebody breaks into your car, when think about it. It's hard for us to be able to give that grace to other people and serve the community that has done wrong, that has broken laws multiple times, and give them that grace. So there's that flip side. So we want the grace when we've done something wrong. Lord, give me grace. Forgive me for what I've done. But when somebody in the community comes to us, or whenever we're walking down the street and we see somebody that has broken the law, whatever, it's hard to extend that grace. Now, does that mean we don't acknowledge what they've done, right? We don't condemn them, meaning we don't not give them a sentence for what they've done or anything like that. Jesus didn't do that, but Jesus extended grace But Jesus also extended truth. And that's the truth part of the condemnment, right? So as we're going through, that, there's a story in the book of Matthew that, you know, Jesus and, you know, his disciples are walking through the town, and they get to this intersection. So kind of picture this, you know, they're walking through, they get to this intersection, and they meet this guy by the name of Matthew. And Jesus starts talking to Matthew, and Peter and the guys are getting a little bit frustrated because now Jesus says, hey, we want you to come with me. Come with me, Matthew. And on the second aspect of that, he says, not only come with me, but we're going to go to your house and we're going to dine together. So Jesus had no problems calling a sinner, calling out sin for sin, calling a sinner, and then he died for those sins, right? So Peter and them are like, we're not going to go eat with this guy. He's a tax gatherer. He's like one of the worst people ever. He stole from us. He stole from the people. He's stolen from everybody. So Jesus says, no, we're going to go, and y'all are going to go, and we're all going to have a good time. And not only that aspect, he tells Matthew to go find all of his friends, gather everybody. Everybody that's collected taxes with him, everybody that he hangs out with, everybody that he does things with, and he says, I want you to bring everybody together and we're going to have a big old party. We're going to have a good time. And Matthew's thinking, these are not the people you want to hang out with, Jesus. These are some bad people, okay? And Jesus is like, do it anyway. So we don't know the time frame on that. We don't know if it took Matthew 2 or 3 days to gather everybody, 24 hours, 1 day, 2 days, 7 days. We don't know. But what we do know is that, you know, so they're getting together, and they're going to have this party. And imagine this. This is probably what the party looked like. And this is just perspective or, you know, me thinking, because I like to kind of see what this could have looked like. So there, Matthew's gathered all these people together, this large group of sinners. They're having a really good time. They probably had a little bit too much to drink. We're Presbyterian. We drink a little bit. But these probably people probably had a little bit too much to drink. And then Jesus walks in. So think about what that's like. You're having a party. You have a little bit too much to drink. Everybody's there. Y'all are having a really, really good time. Grady Judd walks in. Boop! The level of that party goes down quickly because Grady walks in and all the fun just stops and ceases. It ends. And everybody's like, we can't have any fun anymore. The sheriff of Polk County, who goes after everybody, just walked in. So now we have to be good. Right? So Jesus walks in. He's conversing with people. And, you know, they're talking. He's talking to Matthew. And Matthew's like, Jesus, why do you want to hang out with these people? And all this stuff. And then the Pharisees are walking by, the people who supposedly know the law better than anybody walk by, and they say, hey, knocks on the door, somebody comes to the door, it's not Jesus, probably Matthew, but hey, can you ask Jesus why he's here? So, and he could probably hear, you know, them talking and asking that question. Ask him, why would he go and hang out with sinners? So this is in Matthew 9, chapter 12, right? So if you want to flip over to Matthew 9, chapter 12, and you can see the question that's asked before that in chapter 11. And I'll let you get there, because it's kind of funny. Jesus' response is really, really good, because Jesus then responds and says, shh, don't ask that question. You're going to hurt their feelings. Did he say that? And if you ask that question, he's going to raise your taxes. No, that's not what Jesus said. That was not the response that Jesus said. Jesus responded to Matthew and to them and said that not only that the healthy do not need a doctor, but the sick do, right? So that's his response. That's how he responds to that question. And Matthew's like, what are you talking about? You're calling me sick? I'm the sick one? When these people are standing at the door calling you out, and Jesus says, yeah, you're the sick one. Because you stole from people. You've taken from people that are less fortunate. You know, and calls him out. He was gracious. He went to his house. He loved him. He was there for him. He lifted him up. But then he had the truth side. He called him out on that sin. And was honest with him and said, hey, you're sick. But then he goes back and responds a little bit further on and pretty much says, hey, Pharisees, you need to learn a little bit more about what you're trying to teach because, hey, I'm Jesus, right? And kind of sends them on their way and says that he's there for the sinners and not for the righteous. Jesus came for the sinners, not the righteous. Let's think about that. I want that to really sink in, because we tend to get caught up in how we were raised. We went through all the classes. We went through all the trainings. We went through all the discipleship stuff. We did all of that because that's what we've always done. And the thought process is Jesus didn't come for everybody who started out doing everything the way we're supposed to be doing it. The Pharisees were that same way. They thought they knew, and Jesus says, no, I didn't come for the righteous. I came for the sinners. But we all know that he came for everybody, right? So another beautiful story of this, and it's really, really good, and I really want to nail this point home, is Jesus is getting prepared to go to the Temple Mount. So picture that Temple Mount, and that's something that they take is very sacred to the Jews, to everybody. They got the altar, they're over there, sacrificing animals. It's just the Holy of Holies is there. Everything is going on. Jesus gets up there and preaches, and everybody kind of just flocks to that. Well, he's up there, and all of you've heard this story. They bring a lady. They throw her at the feet of Jesus, okay? And says, Jesus, she sinned. She's done all these things, called her out, threw her at his feet. And what was the punishment for her sins? Anybody remember? What'd they say should happen? Stoning, thank you. Somebody's listening to me. Stone her. They called for her to be stoned. And Jesus backs up. Imagine she's probably laying there. She's weeping, sobbing, crying, probably shaking, trembling, scared, because she knows it's hanging on the wall in the church there that she should be stoned for her sins. And Jesus says, okay. He calls them out. Go ahead. Stone her. And I imagine, she's laying there. He backs up. He says, okay, stone her. He looks away. He kind of says, but wait, hold on. Before you do that, though, the only way you can stone her is if you have not sinned yourself. You without sin cast the first stone. So go ahead. If you haven't sinned, go ahead, stone her. Gotcha. That was one of Jesus' gotcha moments, because they looked around at each other. They were like, nah, we can't do it. He got us again. Jesus. And that was the grace, right? That was the grace. So they're all kind of backing off and pulling the young guys back because one of the ones, you know, they were probably wanting to really make this happen. So saying, hey, nope, we got to go. Jesus called us out on this. But that was the grace, right? But there's a truth to that. So while they're doing that, Jesus kneels down and he starts writing in the sand. We don't know what he's writing in the sand, but he's probably, you know, writing something in Aramaic or whatever. And I my thought process is, and what I would like to think that Jesus wrote is, it takes one to know one, right? I don't know. I don't know what he wrote. We have no clue, but probably something along those lines. But he looked this woman in the face and said, hey, showed you grace. But then the truth side of that is he told her, he left her and said, but go and sin no more. End your life of sin. Don't do it. Stop what you're doing. Go and sin no more. So what we do at Church Service Center is we meet people where they're at in life. We love to meet people where they're at in life. There's not very many people for things that they've done that we have not talked to. And when I mean we have met with hardened criminals, we've met with them. But our job is to serve them no matter what, be that grace to the individuals in the community, to those who need us, to those who need love. So grace and truth equals love. Full grace, full truth, love. I'm going to say it one more time. Full grace plus full truth equals full love. Right? So we show, don't get me wrong, there's no way that I can be full grace and full truth. I'm not perfect. I'm an imbalance, okay? But as a team, we can hopefully come together, be that full grace, full truth, and show that love to those in the community who really need it, lift them up, hopefully change their lives around through the way God's called us to do. When you go through and you listen to all the parables that Jesus shared, it was always grace, always truth, all the time. Jesus never missed an opportunity to share grace, to give out grace, and he never watered down the truth, ever. Yeah, so it was always truth, always grace. To the point to where we all know that the pinnacle of Christianity, the pinnacle story of it all, with Jesus is hanging on the cross. You probably read about it last week, 2 weeks ago, Easter time. There was the crucifixion. Jesus is hanging on the cross. Thief on one side, thief on the other, sinners. They were being condemned for a sin that they've committed, for a law that they have broken, for something terrible that they have done. Jesus, hanging in the middle, has done nothing. One of the guys hanging beside him starts making fun of him. He's mocking him. Hey, you know, if you're really the Christ, have God come save you, right? He's making fun of him. He's mocking him, calling him all these names and stuff, which, mind you, is not easy when you're being crucified because they're hanging there. So every time they wanted to speak, they had to pull themselves up, take a breath, speak a few words, and lower themselves back down. So it's not like they could have a conversation like you and I are right now. Well, mainly me, because y'all aren't talking back, because I've asked some questions and somebody answered. But so they're having these conversations, and one of the guys says, "You know, I hope I know what I've done wrong. I know I shouldn't have done it, but I really would love if you could remember me. So Jesus, think about this, lifts himself up and says, pretty much says, hey, you've acknowledged your sin. Jesus is hanging on the cross, being crucified, shows grace to somebody that's broken the law and says, what? Today, not tomorrow, not next year, not whenever you go to hell and you clear things up, not whenever you decide to say a prayer, a sinner's prayer, not whenever you went through all the classes because that's what we're supposed to do. Today, because you've asked for it, you will be with what? Me, thank you, in paradise. Right? Today, you will be with me in paradise. That is the pinnacle moment of grace and truth and love. Because he's acknowledged his sin. Jesus acknowledged his wrongdoing to the sinner. Jesus had no wrongdoing, so that phrasing was a little bad. Jesus acknowledged the sinners, the thief, the man on the cross beside him, his wrongdoing, and then turned to him and showed the ultimate act of grace we could ever see by saving his life in an instant. If that doesn't get you going, I don't know what will. Because that was grace, truth, and love. And we all know John 3:16, for God so loved the world that, for God so loved, love the world, he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever, what? Believe in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. So Jesus had no problems calling sin for sin, sinners for sinners, dying on the cross, giving his life, everything that he had for you and I to have everlasting life, to be able to live, serve the community, love, give back, and do what he's called us to do. So we are called at Church Service Center, our mission statement, and I believe I shared this last time. Does anybody remember? It's okay if you don't. It's real easy. I want you to write it down. It's to empower people and inspire change. To empower people and inspire change. Okay? When you break that down, it's E-P-I-C. What's that spell? Epic. The story of Christ is so epic. We want to be that for our community, for everybody that walks in through our doors. We want to be epic. We want to ultimately be grace, be love, be everything that God's called us to do, so that we can make sure that we're meeting the needs of the individuals, meeting the needs of the community, but also we want to make sure that we are a lasting change in their life. We don't want them to go back and continue to sin. We want them to go and sin no more. We know they're human. We're human. I'm human. We all make mistakes. We all fall short of the glory of God. But that's what we're called to do. That's our mission statement. That's why we love being able to, through your support, through how you gather together every year, raise funds for a Christmas project and adopt close to 100 kids every year to give them things that most of the time they probably would never even get. We love that you are love. And that's one thing that John said, that God is love. Love is not God. Let's make sure we understand that clearly. Love is not God, but God is love. We don't want to ever reverse that. We don't want to ever change that around, get it mixed up. The big thing is that I want to leave with everybody today is Jesus came for the sinners. Jesus did not come for the righteous. Jesus came to be grace plus truth equals love. I'm a firm believer that people return to the last place they feel loved, whether that's here, back through those doorways, when somebody walks in, show them some love. When you're out in the community and somebody walks up to you, they may look bad, they may smell bad, they may be dirty. Show them some love. And one of the big things that we're starting, we're actually Monday, tomorrow, I'm going to be signing the contract, and we're going to start a build on about a $100,000 shower trailer. That's going to have 3 showers, washer and dryer, full capabilities of serving our homeless population or anybody that really needs a shower. Of course, the target demographic is going to be the homeless population, but anybody that needs a shower so they can come to us and they can get cleaned, right? So was meeting with a nurse, and then I'll wrap things up because I think we're getting close to lunchtime, and I don't want anybody to start walking out. Miss Gertie's still here, so we're good. I can pick on Miss Gertie. She don't care. We're starting the showers because I talked with some nurses at BayCare. BayCare is fully funding this, right? So BayCare is helping us build this shower because this nurse realized that when somebody came in and they were homeless or they weren't clean, they were fidgety, they were antsy, they could not be still, they were just all over the place. They were not comfortable in their own skin because they were unclean. So she started to realize, and she said, I'm going to give them a shower. I'm going to offer them a shower before we do anything. Because, you know, when you go into the hospital, they don't want you to do nothing. They want to make sure you're laying in that bed. You don't move until they figure out what's wrong, and then you can get a shower in 2 or 3 days or whatever. Some of you have experienced that. She flipped it over, changed things up, offered the shower, and noticed a complete change in their life, which is biblical. Right? Biblical. We're called to be baptized in the water to wash away the old and bring on the newness of life. And that's where the Baptist in me is coming out, because in the Presbyterian church, we'll sprinkle or we'll dab. But we need the true visual of that is submersion, full on cleansing, to see a change in somebody's life. So we're starting this shower unit. I don't know, we're going to call it Heavenly Showers or something. Really haven't fully landed on a name yet. Be praying about that. We're going to launch it at the end of this year, beginning of next year, because they have to fully build it from scratch. So 3 showers. One of the showers is going to be handicap accessible, so we can serve anybody with any needs while they're showering. They're going to have laundry being done, washed, dried, fully clean when they come out. We're going to give them some new clothes, give them back their clean clothes, and then we're going to be able to have a conversation with them. Then we're going to be able to sit down with them. Y'all can come along. You can sit down with them while they're clean and share the love of Christ with them and say, hey, what can I do to pray for you? What can I do to make a difference in your life? Tri-County is going to be there with us, and they're going to be helping them through some mental health counseling, Peace River Center as well, doing some substance abuse stuff. We're going to have a full gamut of wraparound services at these shower events, and this is going to be a weekly thing. probably twice a week. My goal is to actually offer it twice a week. And it's going to travel around the county, the shower unit, and it's going to be set up in different areas, showers, offer the cleansing, so that we can have comfortable conversations with individuals who truly need to hear grace, truth equals love.